Thanks for tuning to Digital Voices Podcast, where we chat digital transformation, challenges, and opportunities across healthcare and life sciences. And now, your host, Ed Marks.
Hey, everyone, it's Ed. Welcome to another edition of Digital Voices. I really appreciate you joining me. I know there's tons of great podcasts out there, and you've chosen to listen to our drop, and I appreciate it. We'll make it super interesting as always. And thank you for being a listener. As you know, ad-free, sponsor-free, just pure content. And today I have a friend, Sumit Nagpal, joining us. He is chairman, CEO, founder of Cherish, and a longtime board member of HIMSS. Sumit, welcome to Digital Voices.
Hi, Ed. Thanks for having me.
Now, Sumit, if anyone looks at your bio, they're going to see something that says super optimistic badass. How did that come about?
Words to live by. Well, the easiest way to explain how it came about is I had to become that. I'm always pushing the boundary on invention, on innovation. You can't do that if you're not optimistic, super optimistic. And sometimes you just have to be stubborn. Yeah. So super optimistic badass.
I love it. Yeah, I think it's great. And I can appreciate that. Yeah, because you are a serial entrepreneur. You've created a lot of companies and a lot of opportunities for people and organizations. And so that makes a lot of sense. But the most important question, Sumit, is what are the songs on your playlist?
I'm a bit of a hippie. And I also have very, very eclectic tastes. So that varied tastes. I listen to everything. And so will you ever catch me here listening to Taylor Swift? Probably. You'll probably catch me listening to Rihanna and Beyonce. But outside of that, the stuff that I listen to all the time, lots of Bob Dylan, Mark Knopfler, every once in a while Sting, U2 thrown in. This guy, Brian May, has just absolutely killed it. He's amazing. So that's my current favorite.
Have you ever gone to see any of those people in concert? And what was it like?
You two for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can imagine they know how to throw a party.
Yeah.
Great show.
They've always been great showmen, and I have not seen them yet at the Sphere, but that's supposed to be sort of over the top.
There are lots of folks I know who've been there, some, you know, more than once. And all I can say is I'm jealous. Vegas is in my future soon.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to time it though with when they're playing.
That's right.
And yeah, we've known each other for like 10 years. I think we met at probably at HIMSS. And we had dinner together, and mm-hmm. was brought together by a mutual friend. Mm-hmm. And since then, we've become friends and our wives and all that kind of stuff. And so it's been really great to have that friendship and also see just the maturation and growth of some of your companies, which we'll talk about. And you already sort of shared with us your life message and mantra about being super optimistic, badass. So we'll go with that because that's a pretty good one. And it is what you need in this day and age, especially as an entrepreneur. So Sumit, tell us a little bit about your story, because I've highlighted a little bit, I'm foreshadowed a little bit. You know, you've done a lot of entrepreneur things, but tell us, like, where did you grow up? And then, you know, how did you become the person you've become?
So I grew up in India. I grew up, actually, I had an incredibly blessed childhood growing up in a part of India that, you know, not too many people come from. I grew up in Kashmir, up in the mountains. And had this amazing childhood in a place that was absolutely stunningly beautiful. Got to grow up in nature, and I would take off for endless bike rides or go climb a mountain, take my dog into the woods. It was a carefree, never worried about anything kind of childhood. Of course, everything blew up over there with terrorism. I wound up in the U.S. when I was 16. My parents came here to get their master's when they took their sabbatical. And I wound up in Brookline, Massachusetts. And the rest, as they say, is history. Wound up going to Brown, developed the bug to be an entrepreneur because I fell in love with all the stuff that Steve Jobs was doing. Wound up building a company that focused on Next, wound up becoming the guy who did demos for some of his largest Fortune 50 customers to sell Next to. And just, I got the bug to be an entrepreneur in that experience, working side by side with him and his team. And 5 companies later, I'm still at it. Also learned how to really take very complex ideas and boil them down to their essence from the master. It's the thing that he did better than anyone else. Incredible complexity boiled down to its essence. And that's how we got some of the magical things that he helped bring to life in the world. And that's a quality I've then adopted and made mine as well. It's a key part of what we do in every one of our companies. It's been a signature across them all.
Yeah.
Story with my companies has been very much, you know, back to super optimistic badass. I started off in the early 90s, my first company. We built an electronic medical record in 1993. Wow. We didn't even know what to call it back then. We didn't call it an electronic medical record. We called it a physician's desktop. And we did something that we didn't have a word for back then. We didn't know the word interoperability. We wound up connecting data from a few dozen systems across a teaching hospital in Boston and building a longitudinal view of a patient's record, inpatient record, across all the various departmental systems. We used something back then that I didn't know would become such a big deal called HL7. Mm. Holy smokes, 1993. So we started that way. We joined up patient data within single hospitals before that was a thing. Then we did, at my next company, telehealth in the mid-90s, before the internet. We won a contract with the Mayo Clinic to build their global second opinion systems. And that was an incredible journey. We wound up building something that did both store and forward and real-time video, real-time consultations. We were moving angiograms, ultrasounds, MRIs, CT scans around the world, compressing them, moving them. And we were doing something which was, again, you know, now we kind of scratch our heads going, how the heck did we pull that off back then? We were doing workflow integration between institutions. Somebody sitting in Dubai could place an order and deliver medical records into the internal systems of the Mayo Clinic, and they'd show up in the same slot from the same buckets as though the patient was in a waiting room or in the clinic, admitted to the clinic, getting registered automatically along the way. All of that stuff. That was company two. Company three, we kind of took all of this, joined it all together, and built health information exchanges. Doomed market in so many ways because the incentives to share data still are challenging. That was one of those, this is a really great idea and everyone will benefit from it in terms of people whose records they are. And a really bad idea for people who create those records and build their medical systems and then make those investments and, you know, want to protect their patient relationships and their investments. And so we got to feel the brunt of that that challenge in all its glory as we tried to join up health records across entire city regions. Wound up with a great exit for that company regardless, sold that to a company called Alier. And in that, I wound up running a group that I was the CEO of the business that I sold into, Alier. It was the Connected Health Group. We scaled up health information exchanges. We made interoperability very real. And we made the user experience to look up interoperable records back to the boiling things down to their essence stuff. It was just an incredibly beautiful, easy to use system that we designed. People loved it. Wound up spinning out of that into Company 4. And Company 4 is where we just changed the game. Wound up building a medical device that does point of care testing in a very small form factor device where you can insert a strip with a drop of blood, and that drop of blood gets spread through multiple channels to pick up to feed the blood across different substrate, and up to 8 tests can be run on a single strip. Well, that technology became just incredibly powerful and served us really well, because if you went to a CES during COVID, you know, chances are your test will run on that device. Once that was well underway, I did what I now describe as my sabbatical. I took a break. The break turned out to be to do what other people would probably call the rest of their career. I was the global lead for digital health at Accenture. Some colleagues from Accenture had been recruiting me, and they built this incredible role for me, just an awesome role, where I went into Accenture and had a combination of a refresher, a break from being an entrepreneur for a while, but in so many ways, my, you know, real world, by experiencing it going back and getting an MBA is what it felt like. I wound up working with some of the biggest companies in the world, wound up helping those companies figure out the next time they went back into healthcare because they couldn't resist 18% of GDP, how to not run away screaming. Started off with the ideas of adjacencies. How do you not try to get into healthcare by becoming a healthcare company? How do you use this incredible amount of capital, scale, ingenuity, agility? How do you leverage those without getting bogged down in becoming something that is just not your DNA, which is a healthcare organization? How do you not have to explain on an earnings call what that line item is and why it's not working the way the rest of your company is working? Because healthcare works by very different rules and economics and timelines. And so, you know, the notion of an adjacency is what I started with. What could we do if we did what we do today, only a few degrees off, where we could apply what we do today to do one of two things: massively take out cost or massively reduce hardship? Well, long story short, out of that exercise, and I won't go through every little step, and out of that exercise emerged the ideas behind Cherish. And there was one moment where I was being recruited by a couple of companies, and I said, this is a moment that requires an invention that's only going to happen in a startup, and I did it again. So January 2020, I started Cherish to go solve a problem that back then when I raised capital, somebody very, very knowledgeable in this industry said, you know, people have been trying to do this with Radar for 40 years. What makes you think you're going to pull it off? 4 years later, we launched it, and I couldn't be more happy, couldn't be more excited with what's happening.
Yeah, and that's why you're the badass. You had to be that optimistic, super optimistic badass.
Yes.
So yeah, let me ask you a couple of questions along the entrepreneurship line, then we'll jump back into Cherish. So what are one or two things that surprised you along the journey? So yeah, you've had 5 major startups now. Are there one or two things that sort of probably didn't surprise you by the time you got to the 4th one, but what are one or two things that along the way sort of surprised you that you didn't anticipate?
Well, I didn't anticipate great ideas, great market need, being so difficult to build a business around. You take in a health information exchange model and you realize all the incentives that are not aligned. I didn't quite figure that out until quite late in the game. It's the same stuff with ideas like hospital at home. What if this works? What does that do to our top line? What does that do to our bottom line? Right. So the reality of business, hitting a great idea on the head, was a lesson learned. And so, you know, ever since then, we've been super, super careful about not getting too far ahead of our skis with a great idea, understanding, following the money, and actually understanding, well, is this viable? Does this make sense? Will someone let it exist? Of course, there's a little bit of badassery involved. No matter what, you can't just give up on a great idea just because people will push back. You know, electric cars are one of those, right? So that's an example.
Yeah.
What else? Yeah. Go ahead.
On the other side, what are one or two insights that you might share with someone's listening? You know, they've probably been working corporate now for a long time. Think they have a great idea, thinking about, hey, maybe I should start a company. What are one or two insights you can share to someone who's thinking about doing a startup?
This phrase that we use all the time, when I started this company, its initial name before we came up with Cherish was FTM, follow the money. Right? Follow the money, not in the sense of go look for the pot of gold, but follow the money to understand the problem that you're looking to solve. Just down to minuscule detail, that's where you're going to actually unearth value. Especially in healthcare, follow the money, right? Healthcare is a huge, hugely challenging industry to create massive change in. And you'll butt heads with incentive structures that are opaque and difficult to understand. And so following the money really gives great, great clarity. Yeah. Another piece of advice. You are only as good as the three people you surround yourself with. 3 to 5.
Yeah, that's a really good point in everything in life. If you'll become like the 3 to 5 people that you surround yourself with. So you want to make sure that they are stellar and you have alignment of values and things like that. So yeah, that's good.
What you're going to achieve is completely determined by that group.
Yeah. That's really good. Well, tell us a little bit. We've talked about Cherish now. Tell us a little bit, you know, what Cherish does.
So what we set out to do is go solve a problem that has existed for a long time, that is growing in magnitude every single day, that has been really poorly served by the incumbent industry, where the technology that is available to people, in many, many cases, dates back to 25, 30 years ago. There's not been much innovation and change that's happened in this industry. And this industry is the entire collection of products and services that help people live longer, more independently where they want to live as they grow older. It's the whole notion of a life alert system, a help button, to be able to bring you help if something bad happens, especially a fall, but other emergency life-threatening situations as well. And that entire industry has remained virtually unchanged for years and years, for decades. And we hear stories all the time of people suffering, people falling in their homes, not being found for days, being feet away from a pendant that they chose to not wear because they didn't like it, being on the ground with a broken hip, not being able to reach the pendant, perhaps going into kidney failure, you know, 3 days on the ground without any liquids and such. Bad things happening. We hear those stories all the time. We hear about choices that people have had to make where, you know, beyond a certain level of, or beyond a certain number of times that these kinds of incidents happen, their families get so worried that they move them into nursing homes, senior living facilities. Sometimes those places can wind up being very isolating. You give up all your possessions, you move away from all your friends, your life feels like it's on a decline. You have to essentially reboot many of the relationships you have. Those are obviously choices that people should be able to make, but being forced to make those choices is becoming more and more commonplace. And as I said at the very top of this, that our populations are now becoming more and more people who need that kind of help. We're going to all live longer. We're all going to live longer with more chronic conditions. We're all going to need more help for longer. And that's accompanied by all of us wanting to live with more independence, with more freedom, with more joy, for as long as possible as well. The whole notion of wealth span is now in our minds, right? So you take all of that together and you say there's a giant opportunity to do some good here, to impact literally tens of millions of people's lives in a positive way. If we could invent something, create something that solves this problem of a wearable device that people don't like to wear. And so the ideas that emerged to solve this all boil down to, well, what else exists in the real world today where if something goes wrong, help shows up even though you've not had to wear something, use something every day, report into something every day, use an app to tell it what's going on every day, where there's no behavior change whatsoever, but health shows up. You know, and a great example of one of those is home security. Once the system's installed, it just works. Right. And if someone shows up at the wrong place at the wrong time, someone will get alerted and help will show up. And you don't have to pay attention every day to make sure that it's all working, to make sure that you've told it what's going on in your life. It's all ambient. It's spatial computing, right? It works. Same thing with smoke detectors, fire alarms. They just, you know, they make a racket once a year when they need to change a battery, but that's about it. The rest of the time, they're just passively sitting around doing what they do. I personally don't believe that people can change behavior, especially the kinds of behaviors that cause, health challenges in a sustainable way that they can then keep doing for the rest of their lives. People fatigue from the changes that they've made. They go back to their old ways. And so we needed to come up with a way to bring help to people wherever they live without them changing behavior. And so Cherish went off and invented technology. We started off with infrared cameras. We started off with AI that was open source, just to imagine the art of the possible. And what we wound up building was so compelling and people found it so useful that we said that there's something here that we must pursue. And in that process, we also found a fly in the ointment. The fly in the ointment was the camera, the lens that was on the little prototype we had built. The lens created a giant privacy problem. It created this giant perception that people were being watched. And that, of course, leads to loss of dignity, the notion, loss of trust. You can turn blue in the face trying to explain that all your computers happening at the edge. It doesn't really matter. There's a lens staring at me in my bedroom. You know, who wants that? We heard a story of a carpenter in New Jersey who told us that he had gotten so frustrated with all the technologies and the pendants and the stuff that he was, you know, still not getting alarms from because his mom wasn't wearing them or they just didn't detect certain types of events, that he set up 28 cameras all over his mom's house. And then his whole story was, you know, there are things I've seen that I can't unsee, right? And vice versa. It's just, the loss of dignity from all that for his mother was also substantial. And so you look to solve the problem that we're looking to solve, but without a lens, without a camera, and you realize that there's just nothing out there that exists off the shelf that we can use. This is no longer an integration job. It's an invention problem. And that's what Cheddar set out to do. We set out to invent the solution. And that solution has turned out to be a radio frequency based device. I'll fast forward to today because it's taken us 4 years to invent. We were awarded some incredible patents in September of last year, with 22 dependent claims across those patents, and there's a very strong basis for IP that we built in this invention. And what the invention is using radio frequency in a simple to use device. Back to my Steve Jobs point, simple to use device that you place in the corner of your home, facing into your home, that sees through walls, and that tracks mom and dad, grandma, grandpa, without them doing anything, without them changing how they live, where they live, without changing any behavior, and constantly knows their body position, whether they're sitting, standing, walking, or lying down, and constantly knows if they've fallen, right? Raise an alarm. And that's just the beginning. Once you know that, once you know where they are, and you know the names of the rooms, we have the ability to then start tracking their behaviors. When do they sleep? When do they eat? When do they toilet? How frequently do they socialize? And we can then raise alarms around things like, well, mom's not been to the kitchen in 2 days. Maybe she's not eating. Or, grandma's made 7 trips to the bathroom before lunch. Normally she makes 2. Maybe she's developing a UTI. Those are the kinds of insights we can derive. So this technology, we've launched at CES January 9th. I was told later, to my absolute delight, that's the date that the original iPhone was launched. I was, thrilled by that. My affinity with all of that. And we're starting to make this available through our distribution partners initially, and then over time we'll bring this directly to the consumer market as well.
Yeah, no, that's super exciting, Sumit. And we'll put something in the show notes about how people can get more information on shares. So we're now in what we call the lightning round. So it's like 30-second answers, 3 questions. Where do you draw inspiration?
Oh, wow. My team, my kids, nature.
Okay. What's the best advice you ever received?
Follow the money.
Yeah. And then what is the hardest decision you've had to make professionally?
Oh, wow. Walking away from an awesome job that most people would consider their dream to start another company. Super hard decision. Yeah. I'm thrilled that I did, but not the kinds of choices that you make very, very frequently.
I think I was on the phone with you when you were going through that, talking about different options.
Yes.
So this has been super informative, especially from the lens of entrepreneurship, Sumit, because you've been this great badass entrepreneur. And you started all these different companies and you gave us some of the insights, that most of us wouldn't have based on your experience. And what I really liked about some of the things, one, you were very ahead of your time. So you were like pushing, you're always like the innovator out there pushing along the edges. And then, embracing that, that Steve Jobs philosophy of taking the complex and making it simple and really focusing now on WellSpan. So again, for those who might not be familiar with that, that's just, we're living longer, so we want to live healthier. So have a longer well span. And super interesting. Is there something we missed talking about or anything you'd like to double down on? I'll give you the last word.
I think we had a great conversation. I think the last point I'll probably make is that healthcare as an industry is finally breaking through and evolving because of the pull, the tug from consumer demand, where people are starting to really want, demand the kinds of experiences that they should have. We're moving into a world where health assurance is becoming a viable idea, where the assurance of well-being rather than the delivery of sick care. And I'm super excited to be a part of the journey that enables that.
Yeah. No, it's so cool. Sumit, I appreciate what you're doing for the industry. Ultimately, what you're doing for patients, our parents, ourselves, everyone.
Yes.
Super important work.
Almost.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for being a guest on Digital Voices.
Thank you for having me. And great to talk to you again, Ed.
Likewise. And that wraps up another edition of Digital Voices. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to Digital Voices Podcast with Ed Marks.
Yeah.
If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe on your preferred streaming service and leave a rating and review. And most importantly, thanks again for listening.